Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves and it's a great pleasure to once again host another program in the award-winning series of Listen to Older Voices. This is part one of a three-part program featuring the life and times of 82-year-old Margaret Healy. Margaret is, in the truest use of the word, an absolute dinky-die Aussie. And as we unpack her story, this statement will become self-evident. In part one, we learn a lot about what makes Margaret tick and how a sense of family, her determination to turn a negative into a positive, the love for her now deceased husband Mick, and her connection with the community have all been formed. We learn how she loses her mum at a very young age and how she forms a tight bond with her brother Bill. We also learn of her closeness to her father and how she has absorbed and used much of his home-developed philosophies on life. There are no airs and graces about Margaret. What you hear is what you get. Honesty, an upfront attitude to life, and feet firmly planted on the ground. Here I am, talking with Margaret Healy. First of all, Margaret, thank you very much for inviting me into your home. And could I ask you, when were you born and whereabouts were you born?
1936 in Melbourne in the Women's Hospital. We lived at Munbulk, but everybody had to go to Melbourne to get their medical services done, you know.
Right, because in those days there wouldn't have been anything like that out in Munbulk, would there?
Not Munbulk, no.
Munbulk is a pretty developed town now. It must have been very rural then, country.
We lived on a strawberry farm there.
Right.
And Dad used to take the strawberries to the Melbourne market as soon as they were picked. And Mum and Dad used to get me up at 6 o'clock in the morning and we'd go down the back paddock and pick all these strawberries. And I got noted for picking the big ones and eating them.
Of course, you're a girl.
Or either put the leaf over them and come back and get them later.
Did you ever get sick of strawberries?
No. I am now, but not then, you know. And, my brother told me that little bit, that I used to put the leaf over them. And then 12 o'clock, I suppose, I was full of strawberries, and the dog and I used to lay down Dad's coat and we'd go to sleep.
Oh, how lovely.
And about 2 o'clock, they'd finish and,
And then, that was it.
I well remember that. I really well remember that.
You say you well remember that. Would that be your earliest memory, or have you got earlier memories?
No, 5-year-old I was there.
Right.
Yeah, 5, and then we shifted up to Warburton for start off when I was about 6, because my mum was very ill, and Dad wanted to get another job, you know. It was more central for schools and things like that, you know.
Right.
Yes, he went to Warburton first, and he got a job up the wheat factory up there. And Mum was only there for a few months, and she passed away at 41.
How old were you then, roughly?
No, I was only 5 and a half, 6.
Oh, that.
Yeah.
Did you, you were old enough to understand that she died?
I was old enough to understand it, yeah. And I still remember that day. Marta's buses were in Warburton, Harry Marta had the buses in Warburton. And the place we were staying in, my auntie was sitting on the bus. And we had no ambulances those days. So Dad had to carry her down to the bus and put her on the bus, and then Auntie Pearl took her into the hospital for him, you know. She was only 41, so.
That must have been devastating for a young girl to lose her mum.
It was, for a little kiddie, you know.
Yes. And,
but anyway, we came back and Dad got a nice job at the factory with the Seventh-day Adventist people. And another thing that my dad always told us, it was two boys and a girl in my family. He always told us that you're not going to walk the streets. He said, I don't want you doing that because you won't grow up a good person. He always said that to me.
A very moral man, your father.
Oh, he was a lovely guy.
What was he like as a dad?
He was wonderful. He was so placid. I think he was more placid than what I was. He was so placid, and he used to say, you're not going to run the streets and you're not going to get into mischief.
Right.
And anyway, when he finished the job at the factory and that, and we shifted down here to Yarra Junction because he wanted in Milner's Road, he wanted a bigger house so he could grow a few fruit trees and have a few chooks, and he was used to that at Mombog, so that's what he wanted.
Right. Were you still a young girl when you came to Yarra Junction?
Yes, I was about seven.
Seven.
Yeah, about seven and a half, eight. Mm.
So who was looking after you if Dad was working?
Well, Dad was working, and I used to go to street. Well, my brother used to, we used to go up to school in Blackwood Avenue at Warburton. That was the Seventh Adventist School. And he used to take me to school, and only for my brother Bill, he absolutely reared me just like a mum would have.
Oh, yeah. So you must be very close to Bill.
Well, poor old Bill got killed at 32.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's just...
Gee, that must have been as bad as losing your mum.
Yeah, it was like losing mum again, you know. Mm.
Gee, life throws up some awful things sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah, they throw it up to good people half the time.
Yes.
And anyway, well, I think Dad wanted to get out of Warburton because it reminded him of mum all the time.
Of course.
And we came down to Milner's Road with all the land there and everything. We had a few chooks and a couple of cows and milk and all that, and... And he taught the boys to milk and made sure that they got down there to milk it too. Bill would do it, but George, my eldest brother, he's still going. He's 91 up in Millgrove, and he gets a bit uptight with me at times because I don't do the right thing or say.
Our brothers and sisters all over the world.
Yeah, they
like
reckon
that.
They reckon that. But anyway, I wouldn't part with him for, you know.
Of course not.
So anyway, yes, we're up in Milner's Road, and... And we were happy up there until about 5 years after Dad was in that house. And I think he paid the rent. I think it was £2.50 a week. Mm. And 5 years after, when we were going to the church, he covered up with a lady that was there. That was my stepmum. She was in New Guinea. And her husband got killed over in New Guinea. She had nobody and she had two children to worry about, you know. And they covered up together, and the day that I went to school, or me and Bill went to school in Blackwood Avenue, it was a Seventh Adventist school right up the back, the teacher only had one seat in each room because it was so full, you know. And I went in one room, and she said, "You'll have to sit next to this girl." She said, "That's the only seat I've got." And Jeff only told me this about two or three years ago, you know. And when Jeff went over to Mr. Bartholomew's room, "I've only got that seat there, you'll have to sit there." And that was our stepbrother and stepsister to come together.
Oh, my goodness me. Wow, if you put that in a movie, people would say, that's not going to happen.
You can't believe it. And Jeff told me a few years ago. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. What was school like? What was it? Was it a big class? Did you have a lot of people in the class?
Yeah, there was three rooms up there at Warburton, and there was the ladies sort of taught the girls and vice versa, and the boys were over the other way. But Jeff and Bill covered up straight away.
Right.
At school. Because they just sort of, you know...
Connected
together, you know.
Yeah.
And I sort of took me a while to get used to Lois. But then again, we were going up to Lois's place up on the hill.
That's your stepsister.
Yeah, my stepsister. And we were going up there, and Mum and she had Nana there at the same time. And it was hard for Mum because, you know, she sort of had to bring up two children, and she had to have Nana there to do the cooking and look after the house. And we used to go for a walk of Saturday afternoon around the river, around the Yarra. And it wasn't long after that, and then Mum shifted down to Horner's Road. Anyway, her and Dad come to us one day and said, "Oh, we're going to get married." And I thought, "Oh, beauty, I've got a sister, and the boys have got a brother."
So you obviously got on well with her.
Oh,
you liked her.
Got a marvellous mother I've got written in here.
Right.
She was a wonderful mother.
So you're very lucky in some ways to have two
some
lovely
ways
mothers,
lucky.
Didn't
yeah,
you? You
that's
had two.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
You know, even though you lost one so
yeah,
early.
That's yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You mentioned the school, the classroom. Mm. Were they mixed age groups? I mean,
Mixed age groups, because even down here, when I come down here to this school, you had five, six, seven and eight.
All in the one room.
All in the one room. And the man was in charge of that if they were boys.
Right.
There were a few girls there. Yes, Warburton was the same too.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Did you like going to school?
Oh, yeah, I loved going to school. Especially when I could go with Bill, because Bill was one that looked after me.
Right.
And if Bill came to school, I was happy. But I was a little bit nervy on my own, I think, or frightened, you know, on my own that... if he didn't come to school, you know. Well, I would have rather him to come to school than George.
Of course.
Because George is a bit like my grandfather over at Mombok. He's little bit can't be bothered with you, you know. Not, I don't know whether he was like that when he was a kid, but
was there many years difference between you and George?
Yes, there's 9 years.
Oh, that's a big gap, isn't it?
It's a big gap.
Yeah. It is a big gap.
Because there was Bill in between that, and then there was one little boy, Raymond. He died at 3 weeks old.
Right.
And so we sort of never knew Raymond, yeah. You know.
So you can understand a brother who's 9 years older than his sister.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard for him to relate to a little. He's got friends that are so much older, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it must have been a bit harder.
We always talk down the street, though.
Oh, okay.
And I'm a bit... He says some things to me and I get uptight and I just sort of have a shot at him back again, you know. And he gets over it after a while, you know.
Yeah.
And, but he's living on his own up there and he buys all the vintage cars.
Right.
And buys all them and I thought if he's happy with that, that's all right, yeah. You know.
And this is Listen to Older Voices. Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio. I'm Rob Greaves and I'm talking with Margaret Healy. And Margaret is recollecting her life as a child. Coming back to you in school, were you good at your lessons?
Yes, I was always made to do them, whether it was home or whether it was school, because we had some good teachers down here
right.
that made us do the lessons, you know.
Yes.
And I was disappointed if I didn't get ticks on. I got crosses and all that, you know.
Didn't like the crosses?
No, I didn't like them, no. And, so I was about 8 or 9, I think, when I come down here to the school. But Mrs. Young was a lovely lady. I knew her for years.
That was your teacher?
That was my teacher.
Right.
And Miss Barnes in the other room, but I went straight to Mrs. Young's room. And Mr. Hilly was in the top room.
Right.
And he was a lovely guy. He was a lovely guy. And when I went down there, the worst thing that ever happened to me was that there was one girl, I don't know, she went around the whole school and telling everybody that I didn't have a mum. And it was getting to me, so I went into Mr. Hilly and I had a talk to him. And he took her in the office and he trounced her. And I've never spoken to that lady since. She's not here anyway.
Look, children can be very cruel, can't they? Because they don't understand really what they're doing.
I think myself, she didn't understand, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I could have gone to her mother and said something, but it was just getting me down. I thought, well, go to the school teacher.
Fair enough.
At school,
No, that's right. It happened at school. That's right.
Yeah.
Talk about things that happen at school. Mm. Kids these days, when they play, they've got screens and they've got all these devices.
Mm.
Back in the 1930s, you had nothing like that.
You didn't have a thing.
No. So what did you do for entertainment and play?
I wasn't a sports person, but I did join basketball down here.
Oh,
and we used to play at the Oval here every now and again from the school, you know. And I wasn't good at it, but and I sort of wasn't interested in games much. That's the only thing I used to do.
So what did you do when you weren't in school? You must have had some friends, a group of friends. What did you do?
Yeah.
You must get up to mischief, did you?
No, not really mischief, because the girlfriends invited me around to their place, say, for Sunday afternoon for lunch, because I couldn't go in a weekday, because Dad would go to work. He took Bill to carpentering too. And on the way home, it was my place to go and get the milk and the bread and the mail. I never got the meat, I tell you that now, because I took home, I asked Jackie Lawson down here one day, give me some steak to cook. And I don't know whether it was stew and steak or what, but Jackie wouldn't know because he was drunk half the day.
He was the butcher, was he?
He was the butcher. Anyway, I got home and Dad said, did you get the steak? I only done it once. And I said, yes. So he cooked this steak. And, of course, he's sitting at the end of the table and took one bite and his teeth were stuck in it.
Okay, no wonder you didn't do the meat anymore.
No, I said no.
That's it.
He got jobs about the place for Mr. James in Warburton. He has a butcher shop. And that man, at the end of the week, Dad was a carpenter and he used to do a lot of building for him. And at the end of the week, Mr. James would roll up a big parcel of meat and give it to Dad to take home.
Right.
Mr. Tech was in Warburton and he owned 2 or 3 boarding houses.
Right.
He'd done some carpentering for him. And he'd send home a big pot of soup and a big pot of stew. They are Bertie's, used to say.
So people actually helped you,
people
Dad.
Helped me. Yeah, helped all of
your family, yes.
Yeah.
But it was like that in those days, wasn't it?
Was.
People really
it
went
was.
Out of their way to help.
Yeah, that's right, just from Milner's Road, just across the paddock, I used to walk up there every Friday afternoon And a lady used to put my hair in curlers. Oh. I love Shirley Temple curlers, right. You know. And I still talk to her daughter down here because I went to school with her. Mm.
That's a real community, isn't it?
It is a community. Yes. And I'd like it to stay that way, you know. I sort of, now it's a community even around here because I know I've been here 28 years. Perhaps I know all the rules and regulations, but I don't. But if anybody's had trouble, I mean, one chappie passed away down the bottom there. And I went and sat with her for a while. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. And people knew that I used to say to them, call me if you want me, you know. And, I like helping people, you know.
Yes. So, I'd certainly like to talk about your experience in the village here a little later on. But we're with you now as a young girl.
Mm.
What age did you leave school?
I left school about 16, I suppose. I didn't handle grade 8 too well.
Okay.
And I said to Mr. Hillier there, or Mr. I don't know who it was that was there now, and I said I just can't handle school, and I couldn't handle grade 7, let alone grade 8.
Right.
So I said I would like to leave, you know, and he said, oh well, you please yourself. And I come home to Dad, and I was a bit of a bugger like that. I got sick of the school, and then I used to say to Dad, I'm not going back again, you know. I can remember that. I used to say, I'm not going back again, you know.
How did Dad handle it? Was he?
He handled it pretty well. He just turned around and he turned it right around for me. And he always said, Margaret, have faith in life. And he said, turn things around. And he said, well, I'll turn it around. He said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to catch the bus, Warby bus, Martyrs bus, go up to the Warburton Hospital when it was open and the sand, and it was a holiday place. I'm going up there to see Mr. Greaves and I'm going to get a job. So I walked into Mr. Greaves and I said, do you want any girls for cleaning and waitressing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I went up there and I was there for 3 years. Mm.
So you got the job, that was your first job?
Got the job, he said, start Monday. I've always been lucky in jobs.
Did you enjoy that work as your first job?
I did enjoy that work. And another reason why, just after I'd started there, Mum had lost Dad with leukaemia. And those together about 5 years. And, he passed away with leukaemia. And I thought to myself, well, I'll stay a bit longer because the Weet-Bix factory was up there.
That's the sanitarium place, wasn't it?
Sanitarium place.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, Dad used to work there years ago in the Weet department. And I said to Mum, I said, well, come down and see you once a week because I had a day off.
Yep.
So I used to come down on the bus and I used to bring her down the big packets of Weet-Bix because she had Nana as a stroke by that time.
Oh, okay, so she had to look after her.
She had to look after her. There was no nursing homes.
No.
Nothing those days. So I said, I'll bring them down and anything that you want, let me know or write their list. And I said, I'll bring down, you'll bring Vegemite down, you'll bring Weet-Bix down and all that, you know.
Yep.
And I used to help Mum a bit when she didn't have Dad. Mm.
Right. So you were still living with Mum at that stage, were you?
No, I used to just come down for one day.
So where were you living?
You had to be on the premises.
Oh, you boarded in there.
Yeah, boarded in there. Yeah. Yep. I think that was only 25 shillings a week or something too.
Was it easy to make friends there?
Very easy. I made a lot of friends there.
I can see why.
I made a lot of friends.
You are who you are, aren't you? You don't hide behind anything.
And me and my brother, if we say anything to each other, we take it as a joke. I think Dad was more like that, you know, calm. But George gets a bit uptight at times, but that's just his age.
So you worked for 3 years at the hospital.
Yeah,
why did you leave? What triggered that?
Oh, I just left because I wanted something new.
Right.
And I wanted to come back. I missed home so much because there was Bill at home or George was home. I missed my brothers and then I had Jeff sort of, but the three boys sort of got on well together, you know. And then, of course, when Dad and Mum married, well, I wanted to sort of come back home to my sister.
You want to be part of a family?
I want to be part of the family.
Right.
So that's why I came back home. But Did that work?
Did it work out?
Oh, my word. Oh, Mum was, she was a marvellous mother.
Yeah. What were some of her good things? I mean, what was it about her? You say she's such a marvellous mother. What? What was it that she did?
Well, she'd done her nursing in Sydney and she went straight to the islands with Pastor Atkins, you see, and of course Pastor Atkins got killed in the war and Mr. Abbott got killed too. He was a mate of his that done ministry over there and that. And they both got killed in the war. And then, of course, when Mum married Dad, well, it was just one big happy family.
She was just a loving person, wasn't she?
Oh, she was, yeah. But if I said something wrong to her, she'd just get the finger and say, don't say that again. And I knew, you know. George was different. It took her a while to get used to him because he would just hop on his motorbike and just nick off, you know. And he'd come back about 5 hours after when everybody's cooled down, perhaps, I don't know.
George sounds like he's very strong-willed.
Oh, yes, he's very strong-willed, yeah. Right, yes. Yeah. And when he got his motorbike, I used to call him Coffin on Wheels up here. He used to go that fast.
Yeah,
and I said,
yeah.
Pity you don't get fined by the policeman, you know.
Your mum must have had a lot of experiences in Papua New Guinea. Oh, did she ever talk about them?
Yeah, she was a nursing sister from Sydney, of course, and she was in the hospital there helping them. And then she used to go and deliver babies at night time.
So was she there during the war?
Yes, yeah.
Did she ever talk about that experience?
Yeah, more the end of the war.
More the end of the war.
Because when the end of the war came, they reckoned New Guinea was going to be taken over by Japs, I presume. And they just loaded them all on a boat, the kiddies and the mums, and just got them to get out. You see, and the men had to stay behind. There wasn't enough room for them.
Right.
And she said it was a terrible rough sea, she said, coming out. She said the waves were about 15 foot high, and she said she didn't think she'd get here.
Mind you, it must have been terribly rough living there too.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was.
You know, New Guinea in the Second World War was not exactly, you know, there wouldn't have been many mod cons and things like that.
No, and she had to get all her supplies from Sydney.
Right.
And that used to come over on the boat.
Right.
And, no, she'd done a lot of work in New Guinea. And when she came out here, one of the ministers from the Seventh-day Adventist Church came up and said to her, did you get paid for New Guinea? And she said, no, my husband did, she said, but I'd done the other all voluntary work, you know. So from then on, when she had the two kiddies, they paid her from the Seventh-day Adventist Church so that she had money to bring the kiddies up.
Well, that's
really
good.
I thought that was good, because you never heard of that years ago, you know.
No, indeed. I mean, if you hadn't told me the story, I would have just assumed they would want her to keep volunteering. But they saw she had a need and they met it.
Yeah.
Well, good on them.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, a program that presents the stories of everyday Australians through the recollection of their lives.
When she came to Australia, she got a job at the Signs, and she supported Nana, and Nana was good in the house, of course, until she came down here.
So you've come back into the family, but you've got to get a job. Where do you go?
No, you can get a job anywhere.
In those days, you could, couldn't you?
Yeah.
So what did you do?
I'll tell you. What I did is came up to the hospital up here, and they'd take anybody, sort of. It was a hospital those days, not a nursing home.
Oh, okay.
And they were short of people. So came up, and then you could go on the committee if you wanted to, you know, and be interested in the hospital. We had a beautiful committee here. I mean, we had the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker. And anyway, then it turned into a nursing home, of course.
Yes.
But I only worked there when it was the older nursing home. It's all been done out since, you know.
So how long were you there for altogether? About?
Yeah, I was there for about 12 months, I suppose.
Oh, okay.
About 12 months. By this time, I was nearly going on to 18, you know. And, yes, and down at the school, of course, my husband went to the same school. But we sort of didn't worry about each other until I was about 17, 18.
Or so how did you meet?
Well,
I mean, you knew him from school, but that's different.
Yeah, that's different. You're only a kid.
That's right,
you know. And if anybody came around and said to me, oh, you like this bloke? No, I don't.
Of course
like
not,
him,
he's a boy.
That's
right.
That's right, you know. George used to go out in his motorbike, and he got friendly with Mick down in the old house down there, Mick Healy.
Mm-hmm.
And he got friendly with him, and he brought him home to me. And then when I worked up the sand, I brought a girl home, and she married Billy. That was the one that was killed. And they were all up there for a weekend. And Jeff used to be friendly with people down at Ringwood, wherever. Yeah, mainly Ringwood. And he brought a girl home. And Bill went with her for a while, actually. But anyway, after a while, Jeff went there and he married her. So it was sort of a family thing.
But when did you first found interest in the man that became your husband? How did that happen?
Well, yeah, just when I come back here, George used to bring him up to Milner's Road, and they used to always stay up there for Sunday afternoon because they all had motorbikes.
Sorry, what was his name again?
Mick Healy.
Mick, that's right.
Michael Patrick, not Irish, is it?
Not half. So who showed interest first? Did you show interest in him or him in
no,
you?
No, oh, listen. No, he showed interest in me, and more so. And anyway, George came up to me one day and he said, Mick likes you. And I said, yeah, but I went to school with him. What do I, you know, what do I want him for? That's the idea of it.
Of course.
Anyway, Yeah, so anyway, we got together, and George would go out with me for a while. I think he was protecting me, you know.
Yeah, bigger brother.
And if we went out for an afternoon, and then his brother used to come, and sister-in-law, they used to come, and we used to go out together, sort of, you know.
So what did you do as a couple? When you say you go out, what did you do?
We went to football. They used to go to football over at Healesville. They liked the football, sort of. But they weren't very sports-minded, because I thought, well, the two older brother Healy's, they played football for New G and everywhere, you know. But my brothers weren't in games or anything, you know. They weren't in football.
But what was Mick into?
Well, Mick was in the... At New G, Mick was in the timber industry. He went over there when he was 15. He got £25 a week.
Bad money.
That's good money.
Yeah.
£25 a week, and he's in with his two brothers.
In the timber industry.
In the timber industry. And Doug Walker was over there. That was their boss at the time. And Doug Walker didn't want to lose him. So he said, will you come to Hayfield, he said, and have the contract over there? Because Doug was chasing the timber. You got to chase the timber. Mm-hmm. And you got to have all your trucks with you too as well. They individually owned their trucks. They didn't from Hayfield. And their timber was running out in New G.
Join Margaret and I next week for the second part of a story. We learn how she meets and marries timber worker Mick, and how her boss provides her with a wedding dress. We share a story of a not-so-pleasant life in the timber town of Hayfield, and how Mick's brother is killed in a timber accident. Look, there's a lot more. So join Margaret and I next week on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program, and is podcast to you through the Toorak Times and TAG.